The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Well, I think the biggest thing for us is really going to be our health. And I've probably said that for the last 17 years when we open up camp, but that is going to be critical.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by my colleague, St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Lynn Worthy. And let's start here, Lynn. It's about, we're coming up on, well, midway through the games, past the midpoint of spring. Opening day is in sight, and the Cardinals are going through that usual kind of whirlwind of health questions. And I want to begin by asking, how are you doing? Like, how are you doing? How are you getting through? Are you day to day at this point? How are you feeling?
Knock on wood, no health issues at the moment. I think I'm going to be able to avoid the IL, but
that's good. We'll see you at Dodger Stadium then. Okay, good.
Yeah. That's the plan at least. I mean, I feel like I'm more of a sure thing than most of the outfield at this point.
Can you give us just like a recap of the past 5 days and sort of the buffeting the Cardinals roster has had by injuries?
You said 5 days, but I mean, it's almost seven now. You include Sonny Gray, hamstring, comes out of the game. Subsequently, they've called it, mild, and he's actually seemed to be increasing activity slowly day by day, so there's some signs of optimism there. But after Gray, you had Lars Nootbaar with, we come to find out, fractured ribs. Tommy Edmund seems to still be in a holding pattern or stalled as far as, you know, a certain level of activity and not going beyond that. And we're waiting to find out as we sit here right now what the next step is going to be or where they're going from here with that. And Brandon Crawford, not an injury, just a late start to camp, is just starting to get into games now. I'm trying to think, who else am I missing? Those are sort of the main ones, but I feel like there's probably some other ones.
You had some stomach flus go around. Ryan Helsley returned. He missed some time with a stomach flu. But it's those big three. It's the Sonny Gray, Lars Nootbaar, and Tommy Edmund. So 3/10 of your expected opening day lineup. We get to say 3/10 now because we're learning about the DH. So they're 10 starters. But 2/3 of the outfield. 2/3 of the outfield now thrown into uncertainty, and Tommy Edmund is not going to be available for opening day. As you mentioned, he's been stalled again, so that's the second time in a week that he's had his baseball activities just stopped so that they can figure out why he goes a few steps forward and makes some progress and then has a regression, has some kind of setback with that wrist. Can you put those three on a spectrum as to like the likelihood you expect to see them on that first opening road trip?
I feel like, and this is, you know, sort of speculative, but I feel like just from what we've been told and what we're hearing, that Sonny might actually be the one that just personally I feel like is, you know, closest to potentially being, you know, in a game. But because it's their pitching rotation, like, you know, whether or not that falls in that first series or that first road trip is still a little bit questionable. Sounds like Tommy, I mean, there's just not a... The fact that, you know, that Mozeliak actually came out and said that it was doubtful for opening day before we found out they had to pause him again, sounds like that's one that you can just mark off right there. Lars, it's going to be 10 to 14 days before we have a better feel for it, but, I mean, you're talking about fractured ribs, so, I mean, he could still be in play for that opening series. It's just, it's more likely than Tommy, but I'm not sure how likely it is at this point, and that's why I say Sonny with the hamstring and the fact that he's still got some activity, and then within the next couple of days, we could find out whether or not they're going to get him off the mound soon again, just to, you know, a side session, that sort of stuff. Makes me feel like he still has some time to build up and to get back into a throwing progression where maybe he's in play for early in the season or earlier than we thought when we initially heard, you know, hamstring, and he's had a little bit of a history there.
How vulnerable does all this make the Cardinals? I mean, they start off with a really difficult April, and we saw last year how a really difficult beginning can lead to a season that absolutely caves in on them. How vulnerable does all this make the Cardinals?
I think at least their stance, or at least what they've been, you know, giving off the last few days, is they're trying not to think of it as a panic early, especially when you hear John Mozeliak talk about, well, you know, they have to worry or have to think about what is going to put those guys in the best position over the course of the season and not so much focus on some missed games potentially early in the year. Talking about, you know, especially with the outfield and the fact that two-thirds of the outfield, they sort of, you know, projected and moved pieces around to give it stability. Now that stability is sort of, you know, gone in the blink of an eye before the season starts. So I think they're trying to give off a, you know, it's not a need for panic. But as you put in that context of last season and getting off to a slow start against some really tough teams, I'm not sure how this team reacts if they're facing a big hole the first, you know, 3 weeks, month of the season, and then has to try and build from there coming off of everything that they went through last season.
So let's go one by one through this and look at where it leaves them. You know, we'll start with the starter, Sonny Gray. He's made progress. He could be off the mound within a few days in some kind of light session. He's already thrown at 60, 90, and 120 and had good recovery. So with a mild tear in his hamstring, something that he felt before, stopped because he recognized the sensation and was completely like conservative with what he did next. That so far, the early returns are good. If he's not available for that first turn of the rotation, but as he said, he's available for 30 starts, that's still a lot to contribute for the Cardinals. But what does that mean for the Cardinals? Just we'll go from the beginning. Who's the likely opening day starter?
At this point, I think that you'd probably fall back to somebody like Miles Michaelis, having been, you know, the longest tenured member of their pitching staff, continuously tenured, to say, with the Cardinals. Guy who started opening day last year, stepped in for Adam Wainwright after he was named the starter, but then ended up starting the season on the injured list. So I would think he'd be the most likely candidate as far as opening day. As far as the rotation, we could obviously have some, you know, back and forth there. But, I mean, I guess my leader in the clubhouse would be Zach Thompson. But you could make a case maybe for Matthew Liberatore. You could make a case for, you know, maybe somebody like a Drew Rom. Some of the younger guys haven't had major league experience, but they've got some prospects who they feel confident about who are going to probably be at AAA as starters this season. But I think for opening day, I'd say probably Michaelis I'd probably lean towards. And then as far as filling the rotation spot, you could probably have a few options, but I'd probably put Zach Thompson at the top of that list.
Is there a point where Sonny Gray is not pitching in spring training games, or it looks like he's going to be delayed longer, that you think the Cardinals would have to look into the free agent market? Or is there a price point in the free agent market when you think they owe it to the team to look into adding a starter, given that there are a handful of starters still left, including the two big lefties in Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery?
Well, I think it's been demonstrated by just sort of their activities and also their words that, you know, Snell Montgomery is not, you know, something that is realistic for them. The question I would have about some of the guys, maybe if you're talking about maybe a veteran who's, you know, maybe had some experience but is just sort of out there on the market who's maybe not going to cost you a whole lot, I don't know what – I guess I'm not certain what you sell them on. Like, okay, we're going to bring you in. You're not in the camp right now, most likely. I mean, if we're talking about a free agent, you're going to build up this and that, and then you're going to be able to get into a rotation maybe for the early part of the season, but you're not looked at as a long-term rotation piece because they filled that this offseason. Obviously, Sonny's not going to be – it's not a, you know, an injury they expected to go into, you know, the summer or anything like that. Like, he may only miss a turn or two if he misses that. So I'm not sure what the draw is for whoever it is you're going out to get to bring them in. And are you going to redo your rotation? I mean, you've spent all this offseason touting that you feel confidence in these guys and they're going to be able to give you innings. And then you talk about your young depth. I don't know if they look to spend for what may be a short-term gap that they have to fill. Interested to see what do you feel like your perspective is on that.
Yeah, I think you really couch it well. Is like, if you go to like a Lorenzen, right, what are you offering them? Like, oh, we need help at the beginning, and if you pitch well, hey man, then there's maybe a spot in there. But then what does that tell Steven Matz, and where does he go? I think you're right. I think it's a hard pitch. The Jordan Montgomery thing is really interesting. Snell, if he's willing to take a lesser deal at a higher AAV, all of a sudden that puts the Cardinals, like, surprisingly, I think it catches people off guard how quickly that puts them near the CBT, which they have no interest in going near. They've said specifically they won't come close to that. Montgomery wants a long contract. He's coming off the really successful October and is trying to parlay that into, a long-term contract. What if that's 5 years, or 7 years? That still, it seems to be that the market is not there for him. But they've also turned down offers. So it's like, what are they trying to get? Now, Montgomery would return to the Cardinals. There's interest, at least on that end, but the Cardinals not at the price and not with their current circumstance, which you outlined well. There's no real way to make it all fit unless it's like a long-term absence, which it doesn't appear to be at this time. And they're pretty hopeful that like what they get from their guys is going to be, from the starters that they signed, is going to be more depth in the rotation than, say, spending on one guy in the rotation, if that makes sense. That's like the whole design here, is spread the money around to increase the innings around and build a whole rotation, not a front-loaded rotation. And I know fans will be like, well, why not have both? And that's what they've opted to do, whether that's because of their budget or just because of how they feel they can be competitive. But they sided with not a front-loaded rotation where you might get 20 starts from a guy, 24 starts from a guy. They wanted a balanced where you get 28 to 30 starts from everybody. I don't know. Like, do you think clearly the addition of one of those two lefties would make them significantly better in the National League? But do you think they need it to be good in the National League, to contend in the National League?
In the division, I don't think they necessarily need it in the division, but I know there's folks who think, who are of the perspective that thinking about the division is useless. That's not the yeah. thing. They don't care about the division because they've seen the Cardinals do well in the division traditionally for a long period of time, but not take that next step in the playoffs. So I know there's a certain group of people who don't care about the division, but I mean, doing well in the division, in theory, puts you in the contention for a playoff spot. So, in the division, do they need Snell or Montgomery to do well? I don't think so. To go beyond that, I'm not sure. I mean, there's always, variables, whether it's health or,
sure,
additions that could be made at a trade deadline. So, I mean, it's hard to say what that looks like at a postseason point. But I also just don't think that it's something that they're willing to do or likely to do, because I feel like if they were going to do that, then they might have gone down that road before now. I mean, they went out and acted quickly and decisively to sign the three guys they signed to fill the rotation spots they needed filled before we got to Thanksgiving. And so if they were going to go out and get somebody else who is maybe a premier pitcher on the market right now, I feel like it wouldn't have taken to this point. And now, I guess the flip side of that is, well, now that these guys are still out there, maybe what they're asking for has changed. Maybe it opens, sure, a different door to be able to get this thing done. I'm still not sure that what would what may have changed as far as maybe looking for more money in shorter years fits with what the Cardinals are likely to do at this point.
So let's move on to then what might be a more intriguing kind of race, one that doesn't have like that isn't I mean, look, I get it that the fans want the appeal of a free agent signing or the thrill of that big ticket, but you know, it seems like the Cardinals have kind of telegraphed what direction they're going to go, and is and with Sonny Gray's recovery so far, you know, as we talk about this over the weekend, with his recovery so far, they don't expect a long absence. So that means the maybe more intriguing, though less like, you know, tickling of Twitter topic is, what do they do in the outfield? Center field, Tommy Edman, not going to be there opening day. Is Dylan Carlson, is that a given?
I think right, as of right now, that's what you sort of pencil in, but there are options. And they seem to not be committing to anything in particular and just sort of leaving the door open for a lot of options, because obviously you could just pencil in Dylan's going to be your center fielder, and then you could say, you know, Alec Burleson takes over in left for Newt if he's not ready, and he may be ready, and then you can just go forward from there. But there's really a lot of different sort of, you know, avenues you could go down, because Dylan Carlson could also play left field. Brandon Donovan could play left field. They haven't gotten him in the outfield yet, but Ollie Marmol said that that was actually coming this week regardless of the injury, that him getting some work in the outfield was something we were going to see in this next week. So if he goes out there, then that gives you a different option, whether that means, you know, okay, Dylan's in center, Donnie could be in left, and then does the DH become in play? Does that mean, you know, Alec Burleson can maybe be your DH? Does that mean it gives you another option on DH? If you put Carlson in one of the corner spots, which would most likely be left field because they're going to leave Jordan Walker alone and let him play right, then what are your center field options? And that's where I'm sure people will jump directly to Victor Scott II and say, with, you know, highly talented prospect, the speed, the dynamic athleticism, is he the guy to just push him straight up? He hasn't played above double A, but push him straight there. Of course, Cardinals folks, you know, I think both John Mozeliak and Ollie Marmol mentioned Michael Ciani and his defensive prowess as a guy who can play center field, who gives you an excellent defender, who's already, I mean, for what it's worth, right at this moment, is on the 40-man where Victor Scott is not. Mm-hmm. So great there's point. A lot of things that, you know, again, there's options. There's the, you know, I guess my guess would be, or I guess I tend to think that they would probably do the more conservative route, which is go with Dylan, the guy who you've sort of already seen and you know can at least play defensively in center field. And then maybe it's Burleson, or it's some combination of Burleson and maybe Donovan, or giving you some left field if Newt Barr isn't ready. And maybe not push the prospects up and that sort of thing just yet. But there's the door is open for multiple things that they could do right now. And it doesn't seem as though they're trying to plant a flag and state definitively anything. I mean, as far as they're concerned, I think Ollie's comments from yesterday was, we don't know what's going on with Newt yet, and as we find out more, then we'll figure out how we're going to fill the gaps.
In the meantime, you're right. So a couple of the guys who are going to get showcased are Ciani and Victor Scott. Victor Scott's going to get a long look here. He can move back and forth. Like you mentioned, he's not on the 40-man roster. So even if he's assigned to minor league camp, which doesn't seem to be imminent at all because they have so much playing time there, but he can return. Ciani on the 40-man would be optioned out. Ciani, the Cardinals picked up. He was had a reputation as an excellent fielder. The Cardinals were looking for depth in defensive play when they picked him up. He was with the Reds. What has he shown in spring? What, you know, he had stand-up triple against the Washington Nationals in the Cardinals' first night game, had an RBI single, was part of a rally where he combined with Victor Scott for a couple runs. What has Ciani shown, you think, in spring?
I mean, I think that defensive ability, the ability to play all three spots, including center field, where right now you know, with Tommy out of the picture, you got Dylan, and then after that, you have a lot of guys who are corner outfielders. You don't have somebody you feel like can step in and play center field if you had to on a regular basis aside from Dylan. And that's where you have Ciani and Scott sort of in the conversation. But like, that's not going to be, you know, Brandon Donovan. That's not going to be, Alec Burleson. It's not going to be Jordan Walker. Like, those guys are not candidates to play center field. So you need to have somebody who you feel like can play that. Siani gives you that. Offensively, he's not going to be a big contributor, but, I mean, he can handle the bat. He can bunt. He's got speed. He can do different things, but it's not, you're not going to be counting on him for offense. I think sometimes also, just as an aside, we mention Siani's defense and his ability. One thing that I think we can kind of forget, though, is Victor Scott won a minor league gold glove.
Oh, yeah,
like, we always talk about the speed and what he can do. It's like, defensively, I mean, I think if we go back to winter meetings, and you'll remember this too, is like, I think you may have even asked a question when John Mozeliak said they think he could probably handle center field in the big leagues at this point, but they were hesitant to push. You know, it seems like every time they mention it, there's always almost like a little bit of hesitancy to sort of promote that idea. But they feel like he can play defense at that level. So it's not as though Siani is at this level and Victor Scott is way below, or he can't handle that. Victor Scott can play defensively as well.
Siani is a good base runner, quality base runner, smart base runner. Victor Scott is an electric base runner and learning then kind of the ins and outs of base runner. I spoke to him, and he said, I had one lead off of first base because my thinking was lead off and steal. Take the lead and go. My mindset was go. He goes, I'm here talking to, you know, Ollie and some of the coaches. Now I have four different lead offs for different circumstances. We have seen his speed change games in spring. It's a little different, obviously, in the regular season. You're playing, you know, against guys who also play the game at a higher speed and are, you know, the defense against the run game is real once you get in to the regular season where it's a little less. Now, however, he does have a game. He does have a style of game that seems to, I don't know, it seems to be there to exploit the new rules, which is something the Cardinals haven't done. And if Tommy Edman is not in your lineup, and you want to make steals part of your lineup, is that another entry point for Victor Scott here?
Potentially. The other thing that I also sort of wonder about is, like, when people say, or just in general, if you're thinking about, okay, well, Victor, and then you maybe also think about having Dylan also in that outfield mix, or Victor in center, Dylan can play every spot, so he can play some left field. The thing that I immediately go to is that you're looking at probably a third of your lineup is a rookie who, you know, was trying to make some strides, who we saw do really well at AAA, but didn't necessarily translate immediately. And shortstop Mason Wynn, who, you know, obviously is going to be your starting shortstop. Then you're talking about Victor Scott, who, again, has speed, hasn't played above AA, probably going to have some growing pains transition period. And then Dylan, if he's also in the lineup, is a guy who from the left side has been well documented. His offense is night and day in a lot of cases from the left side versus the right side. Right side drives the ball really well, can be a dangerous hitter from the right side, and left side it's just inconsistent. And it's so then you're talking about, that's a third of a lineup if you're putting all of them out there at the same time, as opposed to, you know, an Alec Burleson or Brendan Donovan, if that's the person that's in left field and sort of, you know, and you only have one of Carlson or Scott along with Wynn to fill in that lineup. It's just lineup depth, I think, is one of those other things that is a factor in this when I think about it, at least.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is something that I wanted to kind of, you know, talk about here at the close. Is Cardinals wanted to improve the starting rotation, improve the depth, they, you know, the whole pitching discussion, and improve the innings and the consistency they were going to get from the rotation. But also they wanted to improve their defense. And they wanted to do that so it worked hand in glove, pun intended, with the pitching staff to be more reliable, more consistent. Last year, one of the things that undermined them, or let me rephrase that, one of the things that accelerated the problems they had with pitching was the outfield defense. Missed plays became extra bases. There just was not a lot of coverage out there in the outfield. Well, here they are, a few weeks away from opening day, and what are the areas that these injuries have brought into question? The starting pitching rotation and outfield defense. You bring up the lineup and the fact that, like, if they have Victor Scott out there and center, and Dylan Carlson out there in left, and Mason Wynn as the starting shortstop. There's question as to what happens once you get to the back third of the lineup for sure. How much weight though should they put that on that priority of defense? Like if they're going to say, okay, look, that the lineup's going to have to take some of a step back because Lars isn't in it, and that's a big part of this. Then do they just need to double down on defense and say, all right, we're going to go full on run prevention? Jordan Walker is going to be in right field, but center and left are going to be played by two center fielders.
And I think how they answer that question is sort of basically them almost planting a flag as far as what their identity of as this group is going to be. Like, is this going to be a team that defense is going to be, you know, the top priority, especially coming off of last year where we saw where there were sort of the shortfalls there? I mean, do you say, okay, the bottom third of that lineup may be, you know, in some ways, you know, the question mark, but do you feel like you can make up with that with that top half that's got guys like Goldschmidt, Arenado, Gorman, Walker, Contreras, mm-hmm. and say, these guys, you know, that are still learning or, you know, have had some inconsistencies, they'll have to make up for it with their defense and by being able to, you know, whether it's use speed, use bunt, use, you know, move runners along, that sort of thing? Or do you say this, the strides that a guy like Alec Burleson has made in the outfield is enough where you say, okay, it's not going to be Dylan Carlson, but it's going to be better than what it was, and it's going to give you enough combined with the bat over what you would have from, you know, either Carlson and Scott or another combination where it's like, okay, you're almost sort of playing the middle and say, well, we got a little bit better defense than what we would have had before. Not as good as, you know, what they intend to have, but we're also getting more offense than if we put the best defensive unit out there. So I think how they decide to approach that tells us a lot about how they see this team. And just, you know, I think that to me, that's one of those decisions that's going to be almost a tone setter for what this team's identity is going to be.
So if we go with an all defense outfield with Jordan Walker in right field, that would include Dylan Carlson at one of the positions and then likely Ciani at the other position, and it would put Donovan at second and Gorman at DH, right? That would be like the all defense lineup.
Probably. It's either Ciani or Scott. So I think defensively they both are, you know, have shown great ability. But yeah, that lineup, I think, to me at least, signals, okay, defense is going to be above all, and they're going to figure out the rest, which was not really the case last year. And also, I think that in theory, that gives some stability, which was another big thing that they talked about.
Right.
Defensive stability wasn't there last year.
Clarity of position.
Exactly. And if they go with that sort of an alignment and say this is what it's going to look like on a regular basis until people start getting healthy, then that's going all in on defense, to me at least.
And then if we go to the other side, what does an all-offense lineup look like? Does that throw Donovan in left field and Gorman at second? Or is that the most balanced? Maybe is that the best balance of offense? Is you then have Burleson at DH or Matt Carpenter at DH? I mean, because there's a way where all this shakes out and Matt Carpenter, signed to be the veteran and left-handed bat off the bench, now suddenly is like your DH at Dodger Stadium. So what does an all-offense or maybe the best balanced lineup look like? Probably Dylan in center, right?
Yeah, I would think Dylan in center. I'm not sure if Carpenter jumps over. I mean, I still feel like they would like keep Carpenter, or you could keep Carpenter as the bat off the bench, and you could still put whether that's Burleson at the DH spot or left field, and Donovan or Gorman at you know, basically the two of them second base, DH, probably Donovan at second base and Gorman at DH.
So you keep the infield defense strong.
Yeah, you still keep the infield, and then in the outfield, you know, your corners end up being, you know, like Burleson and Walker, I feel like that's probably, if you're going more offense heavy, then Burleson, Walker corners and Dylan in center is probably the more offensive lineup with Gorman at DH. I mean, I guess in theory, yeah. I mean, I don't know how much of a difference. See, I guess if you put the other way would be what Donovan in left, Gorman at second, and then either Carpenter or Burleson at DH, which gives you probably a little bit better defense in left field, but it's still basically the same group of hitters. So
yeah,
I'm not sure which one would be the offensive lineup, but I think really in that configuration, they're putting a deeper lineup above the defense.
For you, the injury to Lars Nootbaar and the, you know, recovery from a surgery for Tommy Edman, that clears the avenue for Burleson to make the team. Is that how you see it? Or does it assure that he makes the team, and does it clear an avenue for Baker to make the team?
I think it's more clears the avenue for Burleson to make the team, because Baker still really is confined to just DH and first base, with Burleson you could put in the outfield. I think they, at least from everything we saw from this past year, it feels like Burleson is a guy that they have more confidence in. They like the fact that he's more of a bat-to-ball type guy, can draw walks. He's, you know, he didn't have the 30 home runs that Baker had in the minors last year in like 80-something games, but he was also a batting title guy who's had 20 home runs in the minor leagues the last time he was in the minors. So I feel like Burleson, especially since he spent all of last season in the major leagues on the major league roster before he got hurt, is a guy that would be the next one up and seems to be the most likely person to fill that spot especially if there's regular playing time. If it was a spot where it's like he's going to be mostly on the bench, then I think that becomes a different question. Mm-hmm. But and then it becomes a question of whether or not it's better to just have him in the major leagues as, you know, that bench player, or to have him somewhere where he's actually playing on a regular basis and continuing to work on things that they feel like he needs to work on, or just to get regular reps.
I would be remiss here not to ask you before letting you get back to work and no longer stealing of your time. What are some things that have stood out to you in spring this far in? Again, only a few weeks to go before we're both at Dodger Stadium, hopefully. And what so far has caught your eye? What are some things that, you know, you think either you think, all right, man, this is a player we're going to see down the road, or this is a player who, you know, don't be shocked if he makes an impact, or just performance or play that really you just like, man, that's some sharp talent there.
I don't know if there's necessarily anything particular like to say. Oh, this is, I mean, like, Victor Scott's speed is real. I want to see more of Thomas Segese at the plate, because I feel like he offers something as a hitter that even more than I think what we've seen in spring training. But I'd like to see more of what that looks like, because I feel like there's potentially a decent amount there. I think it's more so for me if there's some questions that I have that I, you know, I'm not sure when over the next 3 weeks we'll see, I guess, answers. Like, you know, there's some guys who are definitely trying some different things at the plate. That's, you know, that's Mason Wynn, Jordan Walker are definitely trying to, you know, tweak some things, make some adjustments based off of the varying levels of experience they had last season in the major leagues. So how those pan out as we get closer to actual games is going to be something that, you know, I'll be interested to see and be looking for. And then also the bullpen, how different guys look in potential bullpen roles, how that shakes out, because there's probably about, you know, there's probably maybe five guys you could say that you almost pencil right in, but then those other spots, who fits into those spots and what they look like. You know, whether that's a guy like a Riley O'Brien, a Nick Robertson, Ryan Fernandez, just how that shakes out with some of those guys, and what decisions get made as far as like a Matthew Liberatore and a Zach Thompson. Because I still think Libby, as far as a bullpen piece, is an interesting prospect, at least in my mind, but they need the pitching depth, and I feel like Zach Thompson has put so much emphasis and effort into turning himself into a starting candidate. What they decide to do with him, even if that means he's starting a Triple A, is an interesting decision to me as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He pitched well in the Lance Lynn, Angel Hernandez game. I think Riley O'Brien, what he's done in his appearances is fascinating. Ryan Fernandez, the Rule 5 pick from Boston, he's got a lot going for him as far as his stuff, if he can connect. We spoke at length with Ollie today about what he's trying to do with his fastball that makes the cutter slider work better. That breaking ball, to borrow the phrase from you, is real. It's if he can access it, throws hitters off. I think, you know, we're recording this just before going to watch Steven Matz make his first start of spring. I think what Steven Matz has done this spring is very interesting. It's a different schedule, slower pace, totally geared towards a more more deliberate, I guess is the right word, deliberate ramp up to the season. But what we've seen from him as a result is just a crispness. Like, the velocity is there. Now the question is, as the pitch count starts to grow, does that consistency continue? Is that velocity there inning to inning? Is that movement there inning to inning? And then does he also keep his health and strength? I mean, he could be, if this continues in the trend that it's going, he could have a really superb spring and come out of this as somebody who's being overlooked, and building on the best of last year, not building on the frustration of last year. And that could be real essential to just how deep this rotation can roll.
Yeah, I think Steven Matz, I didn't mention him mostly just because I know it's...
so early.
It's early, but it's also, it's almost one of those ones that I think, I shouldn't say goes without saying, but like the rotation in general and the fact that he's been that fifth guy that people sort of targeted, I think it's like, in my mind, I guess it's almost a given, like how he performs and how that looks is obviously going to be a big one just because of their rotation. Only exacerbated by the other rotation questions. So, I mean, if you don't have Sonny at the beginning, then more emphasis on each one of the starters, including whoever fills in the fifth spot, including Steven Matz, but yeah, that's definitely one to watch as far as just how this different, like you say, deliberate ramp up benefits, if it does. Mm-hmm. I think really, I'm not sure if we're going to really know that until later in the season, if he stays healthy, because that's really what it's designed for, is to keep him healthy. Because, I mean, last season, he didn't have a health issue until late last season. The issue that he had early in the season was just that they put him in the bullpen because he wasn't effective. Right. He was healthy. Until August. It just wasn't good enough by like late May. So how he pitches and his ability to stay healthy will definitely, I guess really for the remainder of his time with the Cardinals, I think is going to be a thing that people watch.
Excellent point. That is Lynn Worthy, baseball writer at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. You can find all of his coverage there at STLtoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. He's been here every day of spring training. He's been writing every day of spring training and all part of the Constant Cardinals coverage, which also includes the best podcast in baseball. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis, and it's available wherever you can get your podcasts. And, of course, it's available on STLtoday.com. Lynn, we got a game to cover, so stay healthy, and I'm going to do my best not to get ejected from the press box, right? That's because apparently now you can be ejected from anywhere at a game. Who knew? So you stay healthy. I'm going to avoid getting ejected. Sound good?
Sounds good to me. We'll have to see who's on the umpiring list today.
Yeah, no, and know whether to plan accordingly. Thanks, Lynn. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.